All right, you guys, let me move on over here to the Right Side Way opening monologue, and I'll just remind y'all that attorney Stan McDonald is, in fact, the daily sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue. He's a law firm partner at Wilmer and Lee in Huntsville, and he's a 30-year veteran in the practice of law, and he's a Right Side ruffian from way back. Stan McDonald, I'll tell you more about him in a few minutes, but he is our daily sponsor of the Right Side Way. All right, I will just tell you right now, if you're live streaming the show, you're going to get a little more because in a few minutes, or as I get going here, JP is going to put a few pictures up on the screen to illustrate what I'm talking about. And it's worth it. If you want to see it, you can go to any one of our, you know, streaming platforms, including our website, rightsidemedia.org. All right, so here's the deal. This past weekend, Charlene and I were at Fort Benning, Georgia, visiting family. Love going down there. I love the fact that it's called Fort Benning again, by the way. And while we were there, we took the time to visit the National Infantry Museum. I had never been to the Infantry Museum, despite the fact that I'm an infantry officer myself. What an amazing facility. What a truly world-class place. And it does honor to the men who have served as infantry soldiers from the beginning of our nation until now. And I was really struck by the symbology of things. You know, the displays that have the giant Ranger tab or the airborne wings and all of it. As a former infantry officer, a paratrooper, and a ranger myself, I felt like I was walking on hallowed ground. I mean, from the moment you walk up and you see the giant bronze Iron Mike statue standing under a rotunda at the front door, wow. I mean, the place was just incredible. But it wasn't just honorific to the high-ranking officers, right? It wasn't just about the generals and the brass. It was a focused series of displays and artifacts and presentations that honored the rank and file who have given up so much for so long to serve this great nation. And it was a good day. And it's open to the public, by the way, at no charge. So whether you've ever served yourself or not, I recommend a trip to Columbus, Georgia to see the Infantry Museum. It's worth it. Now, I will say this too. Not long ago, I spoke to a group of military retirees. Such amazing folks. Many of whom I've known for years, and I told them I was proud to know them, proud to be affiliated with them, and proud of the military they had all served in so selflessly over the years. I told them about my own family, with consecutive generations of service from my grandfather, my father, myself, and now my son, all having served in the U.S. Army. And pretty much every head in the room nodded in agreement when I said that I want our military back. I do. I want for my grandson what my son saw in me and what I saw in my father and my grandfather. Despite the fact that until most recently, Biden's Secretary of the Army, Christine Warmoth, had announced that she wanted to get away from what she called those legacy military families. Remember that? Why? Why would she say such a thing? Why would you want to get away from legacy military families? Well, because in Secretary Warmoth's, you know, demented view, she said she, you know, who has never worn a uniform, by the way, she was concerned that by encouraging young Americans to follow their dads, their moms, their uncles, their cousins into service would somehow do what she called developing a warrior caste, and that we don't need that. Well, I got news. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. That is exactly what we need. We need a military that is so empowering, so excellent, so unashamedly strong, so feared and revered on the world stage that the younger generation sees it and says, I want to be a part of that. Now, I say all that with the actual hope and belief that we're heading in that direction. I do. I believe culture will follow. Or maybe it's really that culture is leading, but the reality is maybe the people of America spoke louder than the narrow-minded cultural progressive minority. And like, I don't know, I'm watching it and thinking, maybe even Hollywood's going to get back to making more movies like Top Gun Maverick that just simply make us proud of our sailors and soldiers and airmen and Marines. I remember back when there was an overt and active pro-America feel in Hollywood. People like Lee Marvin, Kirk Douglas, David Niven, Jason Robards, Audrey Hepburn, Paul Newman, they all served in the military. Ronald Reagan, I mean, his service didn't take him overseas, but many are not aware he actually enlisted for 5 years before the war and he was in a National Guard cavalry unit. And even those who did not serve in uniform in Hollywood nonetheless loved and promoted the American military values and the warrior ethos, like John Wayne in the Sands of Iwo Jima or the Green Berets. Actors who did not agree with the national sentiments or had opposing political views still did not seem intent on tearing down the country. But too often today, we see the Hollywood award shows, they're just at their all-time lowest in ratings, with acceptance speeches that serve as rants against the very country that made the Hollywood elites rich and famous. And we hear that there are indeed conservatives in Hollywood who sometimes find themselves blacklisted, although more and more, we're starting to see notable exceptions. Think about it. People like John Voight, Kevin Sorbo, Chris Pratt, Zachary Levi. I love it, though, when major actors, or industry leaders, or just good folks back home get an idea how to show troops that we care about them and that we want them to know it. I mean, sometimes it's about taking the show to the troops, like when I got Ted Nugent's autograph in Baghdad, or when Bob Hope toured the world with his USO tours. But today, I want to tell you a story about something that probably a lot of you haven't heard about. One of those moments when some good folks got a good idea and they did something good for the men and women who were serving in Vietnam. And one piece of it still lives on. And it is epic. So sit back and listen to the story of what is known as the Lawman Mustang. So if you listen to this show for a bit, you may recall that I'm a car guy. I'm a frustrated car guy right now because years ago I sold my classic 68 Mustang. I don't have currently a classic muscle car to turn a wrench on. But that day is coming for sure, I feel certain. And the passion for classic cars, though, even when I don't have one, especially Detroit Muscle from the 60s and early 70s, still really high on my list. And every single day, I mean literally every day, I review the listings from websites like Barn Finds and Bring a Trailer. I mean, I'm always scouring through the Hemi Cudas, the GTOs, the Challengers, and Camaros. But my favorites, bar none, are the 69 and 70 Mustangs. The Boss, the Mach 1, with Cleveland's Windsors and Hurst shifters from the factory. I can tell you the VIN code for a Boss 302 and the difference between the headlight and taillight configurations for both 69 and 70. Every once in a while, though, there's one that stands out, special in all the world. And the 69 and 70 Boss 429 Mustangs were already rare and awesome and cool beyond belief. But then somebody got the great idea of building some special versions just to build morale among U.S. troops who were far from home. And thus, the Lawman Mustang came into play because of a drag racer whose name was Al Ekstrand. So as the story goes, Al was an avid drag racer at the same time he was a corporate lawyer, and because of his legal background, this became the basis for his name as the Lawman. He used it on his cars on the drag strips when he visited, but as much as he enjoyed his day job, his true passion was the weekends as a drag racer, and he did remarkably well in the NHRA, holding several records at the time in his class. I mean, at the 63 NHRA Nationals, his car was the first to ever get under a 12-second quarter mile. His success and background led him to a partnership with Chrysler, and he campaigned a Hemi Charger, a big block Barracuda, all through the 60s. But in 1970, Al Ekstrand headed up the formation of what became known as the Lawman Performance Team, in full partnership with Ford. And the idea was they were going to bring some of the latest Detroit muscle cars to the men and women of the armed forces who were all serving overseas. And this team of cars and drivers would help teach driving safety through performance clinics and all that, and demonstrations and films and seminars. So yeah, Ford teamed up with such major sponsors as Goodyear, Motor Wheels, Hurst, Hooker, B&M, and they created six of these supercars. And the sponsor names were all on the cars as well. And all the cars were built in Dearborn and then taken off the Ford assembly line and shipped off to Roy Steff Enterprises in Fairhaven, Michigan, every one of them modified and converted. And listen, right now on the screen, if you're watching the live stream, is a picture of one of them. I had this picture hanging on my wall as a high school kid. I mean, all of these cars were like Cobra Jet powered, but one of them was a Boss 429 shipped straight from the Carcraft factory to, yeah, Roy Steff Enterprises. And that Boss 429 was built to show not what you could order from the dealer, but on what one of those cars could do if it was put in the right hands. And what emerged was like something out of Mad Max. It's a blown Boss 429 with close to 1,000 horsepower. In 1970, close to 1,000 horsepower. So the Great Ford Military Performance Tour was launched. It's estimated that over 40,000 troops in places like Vietnam, Japan, South Korea, and the Philippines, the troops were loved on and got to place their hands on the coolest cars to ever roll on rubber of their time. Another picture is coming up on the screen right now that shows you a whole slew of Marines standing around one of those Mach 1s. And I'm telling you, the speed and safety demonstrations were everywhere. If there were troops there, even in Vietnam in the war zone, you wound up having the Ford Performance Team showing up. And then one day, the tour was over. Only two of the cars made it home. I don't know why. It's currently unknown what happened to most of them, but the supercharged Boss 429, known as the Lawman, painted in Ford Grabber Blue, it was found, and last year it was fully restored by pro wrestler Bill Goldberg, who's a car guy of car guys, bar none. I love that story, for so many reasons. I love museums and the preservation of artifacts, just like I saw those in the Infantry Museum. And I love cars. And as a high school kid, like I said, I actually had a picture of that Lawman Mustang, that Boss 429, up on my wall. But I also love our military. And it gets me when people will go out of their way to do something special for our troops, like building morale by building an unparalleled hot rod and then shipping it all over the world so young soldiers can get a minute away from the doldrums of being away from home and smile and get their selfies made with it. That's just cool. And I appreciate it even more as I've gotten older. So yeah, contrary to what bureaucrat and former, thank God, former Army Secretary Christine Wormuth believes, we actually do need generational warriors. We need a military that is so empowering, so excellent, so unashamedly strong, so feared and revered on the world stage that the younger generation sees it and says, I want to be a part of that. And one of the ways we do that, by the way, is to take care of our troops. We need more things like the legend of the Lawman Mustang, because that's just one example of how you do it. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.